Welcome back to the Sweat Elite podcast, or welcome to if it's the first time you're tuning in. It's Matt here, the founder at Sweat Elite and podcast host. Thanks for tuning into this episode. This episode is another episode of Hang With, where I hang out with normally a professional athlete or coach, but in this particular case, I hang out with my co-coach at the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy, who's also the head coach of triathlon, Casper Peterson. This was a well-timed chat to share live on the podcast because if you tuned into a previous episode of the podcast, Casper joined us a few months ago. He is very close friends with Magnus Ditlev, who, for those not familiar, if you're a runner only and you don't follow triathlon, and do bear with us as we expand into triathlon with content and coaching. Casper is Magnus Ditlev's assistant coach, best friend, and he also filmed one of the most recent YouTube training videos on our YouTube account that has blown up and gone well over 100,000 views in a very short period of time, of Magnus preparing for the event that took place last week, the Miami T100 event that is done by the PTO. Now, I know many of you listening are probably not super familiar with what this is because many people listening are runners, but in the triathlon space, the PTO, which is a new organization, have taken the sport by storm and created a new league this year. And the first race of the season was last weekend, of which Magnus Ditlev won. And the recent podcast episode with Casper shared plenty of insights into how he works with Magnus. We also had Magnus join the podcast separately shortly after that. But this conversation, Casper and I speak all about the weekend in Miami at the T100, where Magnus ultimately won. There are so many cool behind-the-scenes pieces of content in this recording with Casper, because he obviously hung out with Magnus the entire weekend, traveled with him to the event in Miami, and was mingling amongst all the professional athletes. So it's such an honor for us to share this sort of information with the audience, because they're really interesting insights, and you will definitely notice Casper share plenty of really unique facts and information about Magnus's build up to not only the T100 but just racing in general. So a huge thank you to Casper for sharing these insights with us. Before I transition over to the conversation with Casper I had just before recording this intro, I'd like to say a huge thank you to the sponsor of this podcast episode and the Hang With series in 2024. Precision Fuel and Hydration are the sponsor of the Hang With series through 2024. As many of you have been listening for a while, I have been a huge fan of their products for well over a year now, probably approaching 18 months. And even before I started taking Precision Fuel and Hydration and I contacted them, I did use their gels a couple of times and I really liked them. But we partner with them now and we are very thankful for having them on board as the sponsor of this podcast series. Fueling has been such a hot topic of interest in endurance sports, especially over the last 5 or so years, when there's been a lot more science come out and a lot more information and understanding on what humans really need to perform their best. And Precision Fuel and Hydration have really stayed ahead of the game in this space and produced products that I believe are the best for endurance sports. So I'm a big fan of their regular gels, their caffeine gels, their drink mix, and their carb chews. I use them all in training. I use them all in racing. And you can score 15% off your first order by using the code SWEATELITE at checkout. You can also see the link in the description of this podcast episode to score that 15% off. And you can pop the code straight into the website and score 15% off your first order. Strongly recommend checking them out if you are preparing for a marathon, half marathon. They're even pretty useful for 5 and 10K, especially in training, and of course, triathlon as well. Huge thank you to Precision Fuel and Hydration for sponsoring this episode and the entire series this year. That's about enough from me in this intro. I hope that you enjoy this conversation with head coach of Sweat Elite Coaching Academy Triathlon, Casper Peterson. Casper Peterson, welcome back to the Sweat Elite podcast, second time in a couple of months now. I'm really excited to speak with you today because you spent last weekend in Miami at the PTO 100 Miami first race of the season with Magnus Ditlev, who ultimately won the event. And I'm going to let you introduce this one because we were so fortunate in how the series of events played out over the last few months, because you joined us at the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy as a coach. You came to me with the idea of doing a training session video with Magnus a couple of weeks before the PTO 100 Miami. We published the training video. It's gotten a lot of traction. I'll let you talk about that. And then ultimately he won and you spent the full weekend with him. So I'm really excited to share insights into how that weekend looked. But let's start with how you doing? How's things over your way and how are you feeling after the weekend?
Yeah, thank you, Matt. And thank you for taking the time to have me on the pod again. As you mentioned, we had a chat 2 months ago. And yeah, actually, even though it's not been that long ago, a lot of things has happened. And as you mentioned, we actually got a really good start on our triathlon coaching side of the SEGA Academy, which I'm really happy with. And also yeah, for now, a bunch of athletes already in the academy. And I think we got on to a good start. But one of the things why I also joined in the first place was also that we wanted to create some content with more triathletes. And obviously, due to my friendship with Magnus and work with Magnus, we thought that it could be a good idea to actually, yeah, just share some more knowledge about his training, how he approached things, because, yeah, we also had Magnus on the pod together with you and me. And I think he is really unique with the way that he handled things, the mental side, his ability to prepare probably and so on. So yeah, I came up with the idea to do the 48 hours training video leading into the T100 PTO Miami race. And just for, yeah, maybe the listeners out there, PTO is like the professional triathlon organization. And going into this year, they have actually made like a world series in triathlon, which eventually actually is the best 20 athletes in the world will just gather it throughout, I think it's 8 races during the season. Every athlete only has to do, I think it's 5 races, and 4 of them will be accountable in like the rankings for the whole year. So obviously not all athletes will be at all events, but I still mean, even though you're lacking maybe 4 of the top 20 guys, will still be a pretty stellar field. And Miami was the first series of the new T100s. And yeah, being on Team Magnus, we couldn't really had a better start to the season, which I'm really happy about. And honestly, everything went smoothly in the preparation and also during the race, which I think we will come more into in details later on. But yeah, I'm super excited to talk about it and super excited to have this exciting season going, starting with a win.
Yeah, for sure. I was happy to see Magnus cross the line. So emotional and so just full of, I don't even know what it was. You could speak to that, but he came over and hugged you straight away and you guys were so pumped. I think that was obviously a testament to just a lot of hard work, a lot of hard training, all that stuff. But you can speak a little bit to, selfishly speaking, the video that you published and how much interest that had in the lead up to the race. I knew like when you shot the video and you came, to be clear, you came to me with the idea, as I said, and when I watched it through, I thought to myself, this video is going to go through the roof. Like the statistics coming out of this thing and just the insights into Magnus's training are just so phenomenal. I think also I'm learning this about videography myself over the years, in that if you're going to do a production with an athlete, if you know the athlete pretty well and they feel really comfortable with you, they're going to be themselves and really show their true nature and how they train and not engineer anything. And that really showed in the video that you shot with him. Like you really got to know who Magnus was in I think it was about 37 minutes. And yeah, once again, like publicly thanking you for putting that together. But let's talk about the weekend. Let's start from the beginning. You guys took off from Europe. Let's start from where it started and how the travel was across. And I think, I guess through this, you can speak a lot to the whole point of what you specifically do with Magnus. You're obviously a very close friend and you're there as an assistant coach, but through this next little bit of explaining, you can share how you more specifically help Magnus.
Yeah, I mean, for once, it was actually really easy for us to travel to the US as we live there in Copenhagen. So yeah, really close to the airport, and there was actually a direct flight to Miami. So for once, we didn't have to like have another flight, maybe landing in another place in the US and then have to travel. So yeah, it was a really nice travel, and we flew in late afternoon, Copenhagen time. So we landed in Miami in the evening. So it was actually pretty easy to get into the rhythm. And normally can be a little bit interrupting with sleep and so on, traveling to America. But I think we were at the hotel at 10 p.m. or so. So we just actually tried to sleep in as much as possible. So actually after 1 or 2 days, we were pretty much into the rhythm, which was really nice. But yeah, honestly, my role with Magnus, and maybe for those who don't know, we have known each other for now 7 or 8 years and are best friends. So obviously, he knows me very well. I know him very well. And yeah, we actually, when I did triathlon myself, I also worked with Jens Petersen Bach, who is the head coach of Magnus Ditlev. And he was my coach as well back then when I was doing triathlon. So I've always also had a really good relationship with his coach, Jens. But he just got his second child, so he's not always available for traveling to camps and races. But with my coaching experience and the fact that we work so well together, Jens and I, it makes a lot of sense that I can then stand in and travel with, because we have the same training philosophy. And maybe if Kevin can't really reach out to Jens in the moment, then I can take the crucial decisions. And obviously when Magnus and I are best friends, it also just makes it so much easier because we know each other. But yeah, the travel went well. And I mean, in terms of my role with Magnus, in some ways, it's quite simple. My main role is actually just to be there, make sure that everything is running smoothly. Now I've also been like on the tour since the very beginning of Magnus when he turned pro. So over the years, we have also really created a good network within triathlon. So I know most of the people from PTO or whenever we are traveling to Ironman races, challenge races. So the people behind the organizations also knows that if they want to reach out to Magnus, they can reach out to me, also his manager, Patrick Lemieux, who actually also traveled out to the race, which was really nice. But yeah, my main point is actually just that I have to make sure that everything is running smoothly, make sure that we get the nutrition, that we don't get in like weird media stuff in around training, but make sure that it fits in. And actually just being there with Magnus, talking with him. And the funny thing is actually, I know that now I'm going a little bit forward to the race here, but
go ahead.
The funny thing is actually that I think normally, like the night before the race, when we have eaten dinner together, it's like from there and until the race starts, it's not really actually because we communicate that much, even in the car going out to the race and so on. We never really communicate. We just know, I know what Magnus needs and it will just be delivered on point. And I think for him, that is also like a comfort thing that I know when I should be available, when I need to take a step back and so on. So I think for him, it also gives him a lot of comfort that he knows that, okay, Casper is making sure that we have everything and that I make sure that he gets in at the right time and so on. So I think it's really just a comfort thing that he knows that I have my shit together. And obviously I know that he got his shit together also. Referring to the training video, he's done his homework. And yeah, the same with me. I try to do my homework as good as possible as well. And yeah, just being there for him. It sounds really simple, but I think it comes down to the fact that we know each other so well. So I just know what to do without us having to communicate. And obviously during the race, it's the total opposite. Then it's really about communicating together. And over the years, we have obviously developed a strategy on how we should communicate during the races. Also, I know sometimes regardless of how he's looking during the race or like how he's talking to me that, okay, what is the best thing to say for me now to him? And actually in Miami, it was really easy that they had all the laps that it needed to do on the bike. I think they did 22 laps or so. So for once it was actually really stressful for me because we bought like a really large clipboard. So on that clipboard, I just, gave him all the information needed. And it was just like, I could show it to him. And then I needed to look at the tracker and communicate with Jens, who said was back home in Denmark and obviously watched the race. And we communicated 1 to 2 minutes. And then I have to give another note on the board and show it to him. So yeah, during the race, it's obviously just being there for him and making sure that he gets the right information. And also sometimes, of course, when he's out there, when you're having a really high heart rate and you're working in the heat, it's obviously not always easy to not take the right decisions because he is really good at that, but just thinking clearly. So it's sometimes I also have to be smart in the way that I communicate to him and what I write on the board. Because even though that he might think, okay, I need a time to Sam Long or I need a time to Jason West, I also have to calculate and talk with Jens about, okay, what is actually important for him to know by now in terms of how the racing is developing and so on. So yeah, that is my main job prior to the race and my main job during the race is obviously to give him all the right information and cheering for him out there. So I also think for people being in Miami, but also on the race course, I think everyone knows when I'm the one shouting. I'm not afraid to shout really loudly to make sure that he gets all the messages.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing all that. I'm curious to know, as we briefly spoke to the fact that when you got there, you mentioned to me pretty quickly after the race that in and amongst the athlete village, speaking to about the training video, what are some of those jokes that came out of it? And I'm actually really curious to know if very clearly it didn't really get to him, as in I've noticed that some athletes that we do training videos with, some of them get very, I wouldn't say intimidated afterwards, but they notice that people watch the videos and then they feel a lot of pressure. And then I won't name names, but Magnus clearly wasn't bothered by all that. But what was it like in the village with all the athletes? Just in general, and what were people saying about the training video?
In general, both Magnus and I are actually really happy about the response we got on the video. I can't really recall that we got any negative like comments or anything with regard to the video, which I think maybe is a little bit, it's not that rarely that always when you put something out there, especially also with the character of Magnus and his name in the sport, like sometimes people can be a little bit negative or say, oh, these numbers doesn't really make sense. But in general, I think that comments has been really positive. There has been a few comments with regards to the fact that it doesn't really look like he is running 15:05 for the first 5K or 16:10 for the second and the third. But I think people should have in mind that he has like a really long stride. So actually, when even though he's running really fast, it still just looks, it doesn't really look like he's running 3 minutes per K. And you could also actually see that in Miami. It looks like he's running so slow, but he was one of the fastest guys out there on the run course. But that just comes down to like his stride length and so on, and the fact that he is so tall. So yeah, that may be the only negative comments we got about it. But also, yeah, there were some funny comments in Miami as all the athletes are living together. And yeah, people were just like, when he was going out for easy ride, they were like, oh, so you're going out and going to zone two at 330 watts. But Magnus, he is a really clever athlete, and people sometimes tend to forget that, like, when he's training easy, he's actually training really easy. And I think that's also what makes him such a good athlete, is that he's really polarized in his training. And yeah, also just from the mental aspect, that he's not afraid, or what can you say? Maybe I think some athletes sometimes lose confidence on easy sessions if they're going out for a ride or a run, and maybe if they're pushing 180 watts or running over 5 minutes per K, that then they're like, okay, maybe I'm not even in shape, or like I need to hold a certain pace on the easy stuff. But I think on these kind of sessions, it's just really important to actually maybe take the mind and the brain out a little bit and actually just go by feel and yeah, just enjoy training. And yeah, I know this podcast is about Miami, but I also saw you on Strava actually that you are also starting to implement like doing the easy runs way more easy. And I think from a mental aspect, it's actually also really nice to just relax more into it, because when we are doing certain intensity sessions or specific sessions, we are really locked in on the watch and say, okay, what is my average pace? What is the heart rate? Also, maybe if you are using the power meter, okay, is my power okay? And so on. I think in the long term, that can be really stressful. And when you are training plus 30 hours a week throughout the whole year, it is pretty good that you have some sessions where you can actually just enjoy being active and being outdoor. So yeah, he's really good at that. But yeah, there were a few comments about it, but it was more like just jokes aside. People were, I think obviously they were a little bit intimidated about the fact that he looked so smooth and in really good shape. And I'm really happy that we then were able to execute it. On race day, it could be then if he maybe didn't execute it that well, people were like, okay, he was training too hard going into the race. And I think actually this is a pretty interesting topic, because also now with the T100 series, it has been a little bit of a pressure maybe for the athletes in terms of the fact that they have to be in a really good shape this early. And I think it's normally in triathlon, you maybe had to be in peak shape for two races a year if you were racing Ironman. But now you actually have to be like in a really good shape throughout the whole year. So with the approach that we have actually gotten into this season with, also due to the fact that Magnus also has his size on Hawaii later on this year, which is in October, and there are still 7 months for that. So we are in peak shape now. It's a really long time to sustain that. So actually with the work we have done, and I also think Magnus mentioned in the video, is that we have actually just worked really much on building an aerobic foundation. So we haven't really worked that much with the high intensity. Obviously, the race-specific session was pretty high intensity, but the sessions leading into this and around this day has mainly just been building a solid aerobic foundation. So not to make all the other athletes afraid out there, but we are not in peak shape. We have just built a foundation, and now we are ready to just build more and more bricks on it. And I think that is just, really positive for us that even though that we are not in peak shape, obviously we've done some specific work leading in, but we also have, the long-term races and long-term season in mind. And I think that's actually also one of the reasons why Jens is such a good coach, is that he's really good at looking in the long-term perspective and not only looking into one certain race and say, okay, we need to be 100% focused on this, but looking across the whole season. Sometimes I don't think Jens even know how good of a coach he is. So yeah, I think it gives some interesting perspective leading into the rest of the season that we're not really in peak shape by now.
I'm not even racing Magnus, and I'm a little bit scared to hear that, especially after his 5K repeat session, which I was like, damn, I don't think I can hang with him and I can run 220. We did, funnily enough, in the podcast with Magnus, I asked him what he thought he could do a marathon in, and he said faster than that. But no, that's super interesting. I've got a bunch of things I'd love to dig into there. The whole thing around, it's a similar thing in running, I think, in the marathon, in that it was a case whereby athletes did two a year, typically anyways, and that's marathon. And I think with the new shoes and the way that the financial incentives are working with marathons being so big and offering more pay, athletes are now going, can I do more than two? Can I do three or four? It's just starting, I think, now. I can see a few athletes doing that anyway. And it's a sort of a similar thing in triathlon, whereby there was the Ironman set up, whereby typically you'd pick two or three and nail just the last one of the world champs. And PTO have provided the athletes with this new opportunity in this new season where they should be in shape much more often. And so as a result, you might have to tinker a little bit with the way that you plan your training so that you're not peaking really hard all the time. And you already just spoke to that. But yeah, so to be clear, Magnus is mostly in the base endurance phase right now. Would that be accurate to say?
Yeah, also we went to Florida in November, where he actually, because he finished in top three at the Ironman World Championship in Nice, he just had to validate his slot. So it's not because he had to qualify. Normally, depending on the race on the Ironman circuit, you have to finish either in top two, top four, or top six, depending on how big of a race it is. But due to the fact that he finished in top three, he just has to validate by finishing an Ironman. So we made that decision after Nice that, okay, with the fact that there is now the T100 and the Ironman series and he wants to do Kona, then we thought it was really difficult to fit in an Ironman in the middle of the season in order to validate for Kona. So we decided to go to Florida in November last year and validate the slot. And that obviously also meant that the season became a little bit longer. And after that, actually, I think he took off most of December. Also, obviously, he still stayed pretty active and did some easy stuff, but as well around the holidays and New Year's and so on, especially when you are traveling the whole year, it's really good to just stay at home, stay with your family. So training wasn't really the priority for him until the 1st of January. And then obviously when you have had 5 or 6 weeks where you have done basically zero compared to what he normally does, then you have to build up the foundation again. So yeah, actually since the 1st of January until the 1st of March, where we traveled out to, Miami, it's actually just been 8 to 10 weeks of base building phase. So yeah, honestly, I think we can be pretty honest with it. Most of the work has been around like LT1 or actually even below LT1. And then we've spiced it up with a little bit of short intensity, but not that much. It has really just been about building the aerobic foundation. And then we will make some more specific work as we go deeper into the season. So yeah, been a base building phase and we are looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm curious to know, when you're with Magnus in the days leading into the race, more specifically speaking to PTO Miami here last weekend, is Magnus thinking about a race plan? Is he already pre-planning his moves or anything, scenarios? How is he thinking? If any of this is secretive, by the way, you can keep it short, but if it is something to share, I'm just genuinely curious. So I'm asking, like, you guys are hanging out all the time. Sounds like it's a lot of quiet time as well, because obviously you're trying to let Magnus focus and get ready for the event. But I'm just genuinely curious to know, when I watch these races, I'm like, are they planning anything beforehand, or is it just purely live in the moment, respond to a move if I feel like I can? I'm still getting, you know me well enough to know, I've only really gotten interested in triathlon probably for about two and a half years. And I'm now watching most of the events, but I don't know it well enough. Glad to have you here. But what does that look like in the few days leading in?
No, obviously, I think, especially leading into Miami, as that was the first race of the season, we obviously had a long time like preparing for the race. So when you know that far in advance that you have a race coming up and you know who will be on the start list, you obviously already in the beginning, like 1st of January, you're starting to creating scenarios in your head around how the race could unfold. And that's also how, for people who have watched the video, that's also how we approach like the race specific session, where I think we did that break we published in the YouTube. We did that 3 times, but playing around with different scenarios of how we thought the race could unfold. So actually it's something we already have in our mind from the 1st of January. But then obviously, as you come closer to the race, where you have an idea of course, Magnus's fitness, but also who will actually be on the start line, who is fit, the history behind the athletes and so on. So yeah, the last week going into the race, Magnus and I use a lot of time when we're going out for an easy run or eating dinner. So just going through a lot of the athletes, talking about potential things that could happen. And obviously, I think the good thing about also Jens, his coach, is that he used to race pro himself. Obviously, that was not that he is an old man, but that was in a different area of triathlon. Obviously, the depth of the field is much larger now, but he just got such a good understanding of how the dynamics are and how they can play out because he's been on the athlete side himself. I think the three of us are really good at playing around with different scenarios and making a tactic based on that. But in the end, Magnus is also really independent athlete. And I think he's shown that actually already from the beginning of his pro career that obviously we made a tactic prior to the race, but it's not always that you can predict what will happen as you can only really determine your own performance. But he's really good at taking the right decisions during the race. And I think that's also why, for instance, on the Ironman, I know this is a conversation about the T100, but just quickly going to the Ironman, that Magnus has pretty early, he got success on the Ironman. I think when he got into the Ironman this in 2022, he finished 2nd in his first race, but have in mind that he finished 2nd in a sprint finish and he had to stay still for 10 minutes to wait for a new wheel for his bike because it punctured just going into T2. So if you take those 10 minutes out, he would have won the race by 10 minutes. Then he went to Roth, won the first race. And then he was in a really good position at his first Ironman Hawaii until a volunteer forgot to give him his bottle. So he had to stop. And that's another story. But just to say, like, when an Ironman is such a long day, you really have to be able to be good at analyzing the race during the race and take the right decisions. And Magnus is a really clever athlete. And he showed that in Miami as well, where maybe it could be difficult to see on the television, but or the broadcast, but it was really hot there. People talking about that Hawaii is a really hot and difficult race, but have been on Hawaii and now being in Miami, it was completely different. Like the humidity was way higher and I think it was 33 degrees. But when you're also racing on a race course with the asphalt and like, it was just like being in an oven and you couldn't really, just from actually spectating the race, it was really crucial to stay hydrated and make sure that you're not going above the limit. So I can only imagine how it was racing. But when it is such a hot race, you also have to be really patient. And during the race, I think Magnus mostly actually just kept to his own like race performance or power numbers. Normally, he has to bridge the gap when he goes out to swim. Normally, he has a deficit, which he normally would close pretty quickly. But due to the fact that the heat played such a big role, he decided to just actually stay at his own power numbers and stay below that like heat threshold zone. Because in the days leading in, we were out doing a run session in the middle of the day because we wanted to test a few things at race pace. And I think he did two reps where it felt okay. But then on the third rep, it was like he was just cooking totally over. And then he decided to just go like 5 seconds per K slower than that pace. And then it was like, okay, that is where my heat threshold it is. And he was like, if I'm just keeping it just below that, then I can be sustainable throughout the whole race. And that was also what he did on race day. He was just actually just staying below his own heat threshold the whole day. And you could also see it when the four guys entered T2 with Laidlaw, Mathias Mercier, and Alistair. Like, watching it on the broadcast, like, Magnus looks really slow in the beginning, but he was like, okay, I know my capabilities. I know what I'm able to do in these conditions. So I just have to stick to my own plan, make sure that I get in the right nutrition, hydration, cool myself down. And yeah, then eventually he was just like eating in on them during the race. And also when he crossed the finish line, obviously you have the adrenaline from winning the race, but he wasn't really that tired or felt that he was under pressure because he was just staying just below that like heat threshold. So yeah, it comes down to the fact that he is a really clever athlete. Sorry if I maybe got a little bit around your question, but I think there's just so many things going into it. So sorry if I talked over it.
There is no need to be sorry. These little insights are fascinating. And I'm curious to know, did you guys do anything or how much did you think about the heat before you arrived in Miami? Did you do much to prepare for that when you were back home?
Yeah, the good thing is that this was actually the third time Magnus was racing in Miami. And normally the years prior it has also been in March. So he has the experience from racing on the track, racing in Miami. And yeah, over the last few years, it's also been really hot. So he knew when the calendar was published that, okay, this is a hot race, which I need to prepare for. So also, yeah, we actually go a little bit into details about it in the video, that he is doing some heat training leading into the race. So that was for sure something that we had in our mind in terms of the fact that the heat will have such a big impact on how the race will unfold. And if you come to Miami, having, yeah, obviously also the fact that we are living in the northern part of Europe in Denmark, like it's been 0 degrees and rain and snow on and off. So if you haven't really exposed your body to the heat, then it will be really crucial to just arrive 5 days prior and think that you can be able to adapt to the heat. So we obviously did our homework in terms of heat training. And we also have a really great team of people around Magnus, which is like people have certain expertise and areas where they focus on. So in terms of heat training and sports science, we have people attached who is only looking at these factors and make like a, yeah, what is the name for it? Like a protocol for how the best way for Magnus is to prepare for the heat in Miami. So yeah, it's really nice that we have so many great people around that can really use their expertise to our advantage come race day. So we definitely prepare for it, yeah.
While I've got us on the topic of the days leading in and the thinking about the race, how do you guys approach, or how does Magnus approach, and I guess you're somewhat planning this, the nutrition in the days leading in? Is there a protocol? Is there thinking about an amount of carbs to eat in the days leading in? And once again, if these things want to be kept to yourself, that's totally fine. You can say it and we'll move on to the next question. But I'm just asking questions that I'm curious about at this point, because you can share so many insights into how Magnus is preparing for these events, which, yeah, I know many people listening might be runners and they might not be familiar, but Magnus is well and truly, you could probably use the word dominating the long distance space, and he's a really hard guy to beat now.
Yeah, obviously it depends on which races it is and how the course is. If we go back to Nice, for instance, like that is a really like hilly course and you have a main climb, which is almost, I think, 50 minutes to an hour. And obviously due to the fact that he is such a big guy and have to push really a high amount of power on the climb, I think during that race, he pushed maybe 400 to 410 watts during the main climb in an Ironman. And from, if you just go into the raw numbers and calculate, that is really difficult to, like, just the energy expenditure of pushing 400 to 410 watts for almost an hour during an Ironman. You just need to consume so a really high amount of calories. So that is obviously individual from person to person. But going into this race with the T100 Miami, we also had in mind that with the heat, it can be a little bit crucial to intake that many carbs as you normally would do in a T100, where maybe the heat isn't as high as it was in Miami. So like the amount of carbs he took in was a little bit less than normal. But actually the main problem we had or concern we had going into the race was actually the fact that it was like a midday afternoon race. Magnus has had a problem with his stomach prior. And we recently saw that when we were at the latest PCO race in Milwaukee back in August, which was, I think it was at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And just due to the fact that you have to eat several meals before the race, you have probably experienced this yourself, Matt. If you're supposed to running a marathon at 4 p.m., it can be quite crucial. But this time around, with Miami race being a little bit earlier, I think it was at 1:15, we actually just decided to move our whole like eating schedule a little bit forward. So we went into the race with the mindset that, okay, this is a morning race. So he tried to sleep in as much as possible. I think we slept into 7:30, but then actually he just took it pretty easy and just waited to eat breakfast, I think, until 9:30, 10 a.m. So yeah, approximately three and a half hours prior, just to make sure that he didn't have to eat too much before the race. And yeah, obviously it worked out really well. And especially also the fact that it was in the heat, sometimes the humidity and the heat and the fact that you still have to take in a lot of carbs can be quite crucial for your stomach. So yeah, we're really happy that it worked out, because that was really a concern, because if you have stomach problems or have to go to the toilet, it's obviously not ideal, and especially not when you're racing the 20 best guys in the world.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I can definitely speak to the whole planning around the meals. It's obvious that whenever I do a workout in the afternoon, or I'm forced to do a workout in the afternoon, it's different. If I haven't planned my meals very well, I can feel very different and perform quite differently to in the morning, when I know you get up, you have a bowl of oats, or that's normally what I have if I'm organized. So sometimes it's a banana or something. But if you know what you have in the morning and you've just had a night's sleep where you've emptied yourself and you know what you're up for in the mornings, it's much easier to just approach the day. Whereas if it's an afternoon event, you do definitely have to plan those things. So that's interesting. So I guess I'm curious to know, do you aim for, this is a very specific to the late days leading in and the carb loading. I'm discussions all the time around carb loading, and are people aiming for an amount of grams of carbs per day in the days leading in? I don't know if we're overthinking it all at this point, but do you guys think about that at all? Or is it just eat plenty of carbs till you know that you feel good and then we're good? Or is there any sort of planning around an amount of carbs?
No, we don't go actually that much into specific details or how many grams per day. I think also Magnus, like his volume in training is really high, just like on a weekly basis. So that also means that even though that in Miami he was in a taper week, his taper week, like volume wise, is actually still pretty high. So it can actually still be pretty crucial not to get in enough food, if obviously now he's used to train that many hours, so he's also used to eat a lot. But if he was just going in with the mindset that, okay, I need to be a little bit careful because I train less and so on, then I think it would be really easy for him to be in a energy deficit in a negative way. So for him, it's actually just about eating still as much as possible. And I think even though that in his mindset, he tries to, obviously it's not because we go to the local steakhouse the night before, but just try to get in a lot of carbs and good nutrition. But honestly, it's not easy being in America and get like nutritionalist food, especially not when you're at a hotel and you can't cook yourself. I think actually a pretty funny story was that we, the night prior to the race, went out with Magnus and Daniel Beggegaard, another Danish triathlete who was also part of the T100 series. And we ordered like just plain rice and plain chicken before the race. But then when they came with the plates, like the rice was, it has been fried in like the butter, I think. And the chicken had, it was not just chicken, it was cheese with chicken. And we were like, what?
Welcome to the USA.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, but this is like a standard part of it. We're like, yeah, but we said a plain chicken breast and plain rice. And that's just a good side note of how difficult it is actually to get like proper food in America, at least where we were at Homestead Miami. So yeah, when we are in the States, it's a little bit difficult to be really healthy. But normally we try to obviously eat the best as possible. But once again, when you're training that many hours and even during a taper week, you also have to get in the more easier calories from just pure carbs. So yeah, it's not really because we go into details and weigh everything. Magnus has a really good internal feeling of, okay, this is how much I need to get in, depending on how much he's training.
Interesting. Is that internal feeling the same as the heat threshold you spoke about? Looping back to what you said about 10 minutes ago, you were speaking about the heat threshold that he pulled back on in that last rep in the workout leading in. Is that also a gut feeling? or is that a planned thing?
No, that is for sure a gut feeling, but I also think one thing is, of course, that Magnus is a clever athlete, but I also think just from the fact that over the years, we have done like a lot of testing with the National Testing Center. We back over in Denmark, it's called like Team Denmark, which is a place for professional athletes where you can get a lot of support from different experts on different areas. So over the years, we have done a lot of testing with them, and we're actually going in the lab on Wednesday as well and tomorrow to do some things. So, I mean, from based on all the testing we have done in terms of with lactate testing and now also heat threshold and so on, you get like an internal parameter of different things. So, for instance, I actually think in the video, we take a lactate measurement on the Magnus, and even before the number is pointing out, I suppose it would be 1.5, and it is 1.5. And you can just get that from the fact that he has been testing so much. Obviously, in the beginning, it wasn't that precise. But I think there is also a lot of people out there who use the lactate meter or, let's say, other tools, but not necessarily take in like the fact that, okay, my lactate meter says 2.5. What is my internal feeling? How does this intervene with the fact that the lactate says this? I think because most people are using the lactate meter, for instance, or other measurement tools, but then they maybe get like a data point or a lactate number, and they don't really adjust that into how they are feeling. They are just like, okay, this is my internal feeling, this is the lactate, and then they forget it. But Magnus, he is like storing it in his mind. So every like measurement he does, he takes that into consideration on how he's feeling. And then he take that with him into the next session. And maybe for the listeners who hasn't heard the previous podcast we did with Magnus, we actually also go a little bit more into details with the fact that also when he's at most times actually maybe 2 or 3% below what maybe the aim is, but the fact that he's always 2 to 3% below that means that he's able to be really consistent in his training and just build the days upon days, weeks upon weeks, month upon month, and so on. And yeah, just a funny side note is that when, for instance, when we end the pool and obviously the whole squad is together on the easy days, guess who is the one who is starting the last? And on the hard days, guess who is the one starting first?
Who gets Magnus?
Yeah, exactly. And that is just a really like good picture on how Magnus is working in training. And obviously, not to say that it's because other athletes are stupid or these kind of things, but because I think it sounds so easy to do the easy stuff easy, but I think it also comes with experience, first of all, but also just confident from racing. And obviously now when Magnus is the second world rank, he's the Ironman world record holder and so on, now just won the T100, that obviously gives you some confidence in the fact that you're doing the right things. And obviously, if you are, I see this all the time, work with a lot of good junior athletes back home here in Denmark. And I obviously see a lot of time that all the juniors are really like seeking their limits in all sessions, even on easy sessions. And that is obviously come down to the fact that they maybe lack a little bit of confidence in the fact that they are still trying to climb up through the rankings. And I've just seen that the more mature they get, the older they get, the more results they get, the better they actually be in doing the easy stuff easy and not train too hard, harder sessions. So I think, yeah, it's a confident thing and also come from experience, of course.
So true. For people that can't see the video, I'm just like nodding my head constantly because it's funny. I actually listen to Joe Skipper's podcast quite a bit and he speaks to this from time to time. It's called Triathlon Mockery. Very funny. And he speaks to the whole training at the right zone, training at the right effort. You can use whatever word you want, but just staying in the right lane of the intensity of the what you're trying to achieve. And that's one downside of Strava. I've fallen into that trap before of just trying to flex on Strava. I don't do it anymore, I don't think, but I did do it for a little while. And as a result, I think I stagnated quite a bit. And yeah, I think it's really important to understand that. And if you want to be using Strava and these apps publicly, you have to understand that's going to make you want to show your best oftentimes. And sometimes your best isn't necessary. In fact, often it's not in training. And what I mean by that is your best being 100% effort. Like that's actually not necessary in training all that often. It's actually much more effective to be training at an 80 to 90% effort most of the time, which you speak to a lot in the content coming out of the video and podcast that we've done. Really fascinating insights. And I think you're 100% right. It's the same in running, is that when you get to a level of, I've observed obviously athletes when they get to a level, I'm not at this level, but I've observed athletes getting to a very high level and realizing that that reaching for those all out efforts in training is just not necessary all the time. And it can actually stagnate your progression, which is almost counter to what you would internally believe that makes sense. Yeah, really interesting. So Casper, we'll finish off with talking about what you've learned starting in the coaching academy. You're obviously coaching a few athletes already and they seem super stoked. But yeah, are you interested in taking on more at the moment?
Yeah, obviously my capacity still have a capacity to take in more athletes. I think for now we are maybe 6 or 7 athletes, which I think is exactly pretty good. Obviously we're still new to the triathlon coaching market. But I think with the work I've done with some of the athletes now, obviously they are also in more of an aerobic foundation phase of their training as the triathlon season, unless that you're maybe in Australia or so on, or in the States where the weather is good. The triathlon season hasn't really started. So obviously most of them are building into racing now. But yeah, I think it's a good point now to maybe, the last time to build towards the season. So if there's any listeners out there that might potentially want to get some coaching in triathlon, I think it's a good time to reach out. But also just, and this is actually one thing that surprised me pretty much, is also the Discord we have. Matt, maybe you can also talk more about that. But I wasn't familiar with Discord prior to me joining the SECA, the Sweat League Coaching Academy. But it's really good to see how the community is just interacting with each other in there. I think, we must be over 100 athletes, both runners and triathletes in there. And it's just so nice to go in and read different threads. There's also a strength coach and physio and just experts and people sharing all their knowledge and different perspective on things. And I think you can learn so much from just being on Discord for 1 hour. So it's been my new Instagram actually to just be in Discord, because even as a coach, I can learn a lot from people's experience and knowledge. That is actually not to say that our coaching is better or anything, but that is actually one of the best things with SECA is actually Discord. I think it's so nice to see people, and also we're really good at when people are doing races and sharing their experience, new personal best and so on. So it's just really motivating to feel that in running or triathlon, where on paper it can be really individual and you're doing a lot of sessions together. I think also due to the fact that I still try to train myself a little bit and you as well, that you feel that you are in a team and in a community. So whenever you maybe don't want to go out there, you check your phone and see, okay, some from the team has just been out running, and then you need to do it yourself as well. So yeah, I think that's a really nice feature of the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it's one of those things where you love it when you see it and when you're in it.
Yeah.
It's difficult to describe, and you've done it better than I probably ever have, because that is a really cool feature, being basically an individual athlete in a community of people where you're not necessarily just doing the same training as everyone else. You might be doing a similar training plan if you're maybe going for the same event, but that'll be individualized obviously to personal preferences and whatever else they've got going on in the week. But that community is awesome. And it's getting more and more engaging as well. People are getting more into it and speaking more. And there's always there's a thread there about great content, and people are sharing good ideas and good. Yeah, I think there's one as well. I don't pay attention to this thread too much, but it's around supplements, and people are sharing all the supplements that they're experiencing. And I don't know. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, stoked. But I'm really glad to have you on board, man. It's been a good time so far. And we're definitely open to taking on more clients in the triathlon space. And I think if you are interested in joining, I really do think that you should lean into the Discord community, because I think that's a huge thing that can really make you feel like you're well supported by a group of people, and not necessarily having one coach such as yourself is awesome, but having a community of people that you can also check in with and discuss with 24 hours a day if you want to, because there's people from all over the world. Yeah, it's awesome. But thanks so much for coming on the pod. Yeah, you go.
Oh yeah, just one last thing. I also think, like, with the way normally you can easily go out there and buy a training plan, but you don't really have the communication with your coach or community. And with the way that I'm doing it with my triathletes is that they are set up in Training Peaks. And then I really try to say to them that it would be really good if they, on each like training session they've done, they can put in a comment on how they were feeling and how, because one thing is that I can look through the data and see stuff there, but it's also good to get the internal feeling. And then how I normally approach it is that every morning or every evening, I go into Training Peaks, I look through their training and also what they comment, and then I comment back. So they also feel that they are like getting a fast feedback on every session. And also in terms of, let's say that I can see the data or they buy their comments, we can see that, okay, maybe there is like some sickness coming up or so, then we can change the following days pretty quickly. Instead of, let's say that I schedule program every second week and only looked into the training every second week, then it's too late to like make these regulations in the training. So it's a really good tool to just go in every morning, every evening, look through the training, the comments, and then make day-to-day adjustments as we also discussed now with Magnus, that consistency is everything. And obviously that makes it so much easier when you adjust from day to day.
For sure. We'll definitely have you back on the podcast soon as you get these such unique, interesting behind the scenes experiences of arguably the best long course triathlete. That's a bold statement, because obviously there's a lot of very strong competitors I'm most likely going to be at Kona. Are you currently planning on being there as well? I assume.
Yeah, we will probably be there 3 weeks prior. And we also got in mind that maybe it could be fun to do a pre-Kona video like we did in T100. So
I'm definitely coming there.
if people is interested in that, I think we could maybe get that sorted out. But yeah, also T100 Singapore is coming up pretty shortly. So Magnus and I actually flying out there in 3 weeks time. So yeah, next race is in the horizon. Yeah, excited to see how that will unfold.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on again, man. We'll definitely check in with you again on the podcast plenty. And really looking forward to seeing how the lead up to Singapore goes. Thanks for tuning in, guys. That was Casper Peterson, the head coach of the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy. If you'd like to learn more about joining us over at the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy, you can find the link in the description of this podcast episode, or just go directly to sweatelitecoaching.com and you will find the website and all the information about the Sweat Elite Coaching Academy. And of course, if you're interested in Casper Peterson, you can find his profile very easily in the menu.